Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies and the secrets of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. I'm really excited today's guest. We've had a lot of time to connect and really get to know each other, and Max is just out there crushing it. He's the founder of Startup Drugs, the awesome t-shirt company, as well as a managing partner at Quantum Media Marketing. He has years of experience creating hugely profitable Facebook ads, spending millions of dollars on both his clients and his own companies. Max is a serial entrepreneur, has launched and grown and sold several e-commerce brands and venture-backed startups. He's passionate about helping new entrepreneurs and small businesses achieve their success. Max, I want to welcome you to Making Bank today.
Always good to be here, Josh. So it's, we had these chats pretty frequently, so at least we're recording this one.
Yeah. Well, cool. Hopefully we'll dig in and dive in with all your knowledge and really uncover some really cool gems and nuggets for people out there today and start implementing in their business. So I guess give
us, First we should say that this is a this is a coincidence. Josh and I did not plan this at all. So we just happened to wear the exact same t-shirt today.
Truth. Yes, because I have a whole stack of t-shirts that I brought with me for shooting all the different episodes today, and I just happened to throw this on. Awesome, Max. Well, I guess give us a little bit of background. Obviously, you've owned multiple different companies, sold and everything. You know, how did you get started as an entrepreneur?
Sure. So it's been kind of in my DNA. So my grandpa was an entrepreneur, started one of the first networks of real estate companies before the franchise model was popular in the 60s. My dad grew that company to a multinational company with 5,000 brokers in 55 countries. And so I've always kind of had that from day one, that, you know, this is just the world. You do your own thing, you take risks, and there's benefits to it, being your own boss, setting your own hours, getting the luxury of that. But there's also obviously the downsides of you're working nonstop. You have to put other things in front of, you know, some things that might be more important in the long run, like, you know, friends and family and stuff like that, and security. But it's always been like that from day one. It's just starting your ventures, taking risks. And so all through college, that's what I was doing. And then out of college, I've been in the startup world. So I've never had a 9-to-5 job. Well, obviously, other than like the college ones where you're working, you know, behind a deli and stuff. But since college, never had a 9-to-5 job, never had a paycheck to depend on. So it's tough to get started, but at this point, I mean, there's no other thing I'd rather be doing than being on or running different startups.
No, that's awesome. So, you know, with your grandfather and your dad, then, you know, with the real estate company, did you dive into that area at all, or did you kind of go out and focus on your own stuff?
I did. So, that's really where I started. A lot of the marketing was in that space. So, you know, back in the like 2006, 2007, really helped them roll out a corporate blog using WordPress, multi-user for all the offices, did a lot of deal work for them, helped them get on social, which at that time just meant Facebook and Twitter. And that gave me so much experience, because if you know the real estate finance market, you know that they're the most stubborn people in the world and they're always behind the curve technologically. Right. And so getting a, you know, 55-year-old broker who's been doing this business the same way for 3 decades to start tweeting or writing blogs is really difficult. And so overcoming all those objections with that demo made it so much easier when you get into the consumer market. You start talking to people that kind of get it or are not super late adopters that are kind of middle of the road. So it was a lot of great practice early on, especially since I really started peak recession. So that commercial real estate market just got crushed. Guys were doing $5 million a year, and then we're making $0 a year. Wow. And so trying to get people to try new things when they're making no money and the world is falling apart was definitely a exciting and kind of scary learning curve of trying to navigate that and help people try to establish their personal brand and grow their business.
And then when so after college, that what was your kind of your first venture that you dove into and started to take that risk, that first startup for yourself?
Yeah, so you know, I started out at Emory University in Atlanta, and at the time, you know, I went to a boarding school, and so you go to there's only 20 colleges that exist in that world, so it was the best school I could get into, and it just didn't provide what I wanted. And so I ended up transferring to Babson College, much smaller school, but it's the best for entrepreneurship. So I knew from day one that's what I wanted to do. Got there, got an incredible education that's so unique and pretty much you couldn't find anywhere else. And right out of that, a buddy of mine from Emory, who I went to school with and lived across the hall from, reached out to me and said, I had this idea. And I know a few years ago we were talking about some things in the dorm, and I'd love to kind of pick your brain on it. And that kind of led into our first venture, which at the time was called The Daily 100, eventually became Loot. And so the idea behind that was basically a long tail user-generated content platform for brands. So a way for them to incentivize their micro-influencers, customers, fans to create and share branded content for them. So like native advertising. And, you know, we did that for about 2.5 years. We raised a lot of money for it. We were always one step ahead of the curve. So we were mobile first before mobile advertising started really taking off. And then we were native advertising before brands started really adopting native advertising. So it was definitely a huge learning experience of trying to deal with Fortune 500 marketing departments, all the bureaucracy there, and trying to be innovative, but at the same time realize that big companies, you know, they allocate their marketing budget for the year based on different categories. Right. And so a very small percent of that is kind of experimental stuff. And so you got to try to fit into that experimental budget, and you have 10,000 startups pitching for that small budget. And but we had a lot of success with that, and eventually kind of rolled that out to an agency and moved on to the next thing. And so that was really our first big startup. And it was really exciting. We had about 40 employees at our peak. And so we really went from 0 to 100 pretty fast.
What along the way, what were some of the challenges that you ran into, you know, with that? Obviously, I mean, just fresh out of college and, you know, starting the startup and everything. And what were some of the biggest challenges that you hit?
Yeah, so pretty much everything is a challenge. You know, your first startup, it's you don't know how to do anything. And so you had this naivete where you're like, Zuckerberg didn't know anything and he just killed it. And all these guys that are just, you know, they're just brilliant. They came out of school and they had no problems and they just made a $1 billion company in a year. And, you know, for us, especially as non-tech founders building a tech company, this is something that like I get a ton of inquiries on a weekly basis from entrepreneurs who are, hey, I have an idea for an app or a website or software, but I don't know how to code. How do I get started? And we really struggled through that for probably 8 months of going through developer after developer after developer. And we didn't know how to vet them. We didn't know the right questions to ask. We burned through tens of thousands of dollars. Half of the people were totally unqualified. Yeah. The other half were pretty much just con artists and didn't do anything, didn't deliver any products. And so that was our biggest hurdle from day one, is getting a minimum viable product without any experience on how to code. And eventually we found the right person. We found a CTO who then we could depend on to build a team under him.
Yeah, a lot of that is, you know, and I same way is just, you know, you go in and you start thinking, okay, yeah, these people know what they're talking about because you see stuff out there about them or whatever. And I mean, we've hired a lot of the wrong people as well. And you spend a lot of money on the so-called, hey, I'm a guru in this area and I'm doing great. And, you know, a couple hundred grand later, you're like, where's all my stuff? What's going on? And so.
Exactly. Yeah. And they go MIA. I mean, I could write an entire book just about that first 6 months of business and all the crazy stuff that happened and all the scary moments. But that's why, you know, I kind of taught myself how to code, not to the point where like I can build crazy cool software and I'm not good at it, but I taught myself enough that one, I could do things on my own if I need to make changes. And two, I know how to ask the right questions and I can tell when somebody's BSing. And that's something I'd recommend for any entrepreneur. You know, if you're going to get into the tech space, there's so many resources out there that you can just spend a few weeks learning. You know, there's all kinds of Code Academy and stuff out there that are free resources. You pay a little bit and at least learn enough that you can then be smart in these interviews and when you're vetting contractors or potential hires. Otherwise, you're just going to get burned and it's you're going to lose a lot of money and a lot of time, which is even more valuable in this space.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. You know, as entrepreneurs, sometimes we think like, hey, I don't think I need to go learn this or whatever. But even having a base knowledge so you can ask, like you said, ask the right questions to make sure that they're not BSing you too. You know, make sure that as you're moving forward with the project, they're hitting whatever those targets are that they've set and you've set with them and everything. So, I mean, I think that's definitely a huge key point for sure. Can you stick around for a minute? We got to take a quick break.
I'd love to stick around.
All right. Awesome. I am Josh Felber. You're watching Making Bank, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, and we've had the honor and the privilege to start speaking with Max Finn, owner of Startup Drugs, partner in Quantum Media, a little bit about his background, how he got started, some of the little bit of the struggles that he had creating his first tech company and trying to find the right people, trying to make sure he wasn't getting BS'd. And I just want to welcome you back to Making Bank, Max.
Well, it's good to be back. It was a fun little break there. So got a little drink break. We're all good to go.
Good to go. Had the, I think, what, FitAid Focus?
The FitAid. I'm just going to pretend like this is FitAid because I do like FitAid, but it's a Red Bull. So if I had a FitAid, I would be drinking it.
We got to get Aaron to get you out some.
Yeah.
So we got the what happened with that company then? Did you guys sell that? Did you just kind of shut that down? Whatever happened with Loot then?
We ended up like rolling it into another agency. So it was, you know, it wasn't a huge deal. It wasn't what we had hoped for.
Right.
But it was definitely a positive outcome in the grand scheme of things. We were really far ahead of the curve in pretty much everything we did, which is it's a really tough problem for tech startups. Is you want to push the boundaries, but if you don't have a massive amount of capital backing you, it's hard to basically stay put enough to let the market catch up to you. And so you look at all these VR companies that are in the space and AR companies, the ones that are surviving are the ones that have raised $500 million. So they can be cutting edge and be way out of the curve, but they have enough cash in the bank to last until the market's ready to adopt the technology on a massive scale. So like companies like Magic Leap and Meta and Oculus obviously rolled into Facebook, but you know, Magic Leap hasn't released a product.
Right.
And they've been building this technology in Florida for like 6 years, and they're a $1 billion company. And so that's really the necessity nowadays. If you're going to build a cutting edge tech startup, is you need to have that capital, or you need to figure out a way that in interim we can commercialize our product to at least cover our overhead on the cutting edge stuff is, you know, ready to go for, you know, commercial application, which is rare.
Definitely. And that's, I mean, obviously you see that a lot of the startups and everything are always raising so much capital. There's another round of funding, another round of funding. And I know a lot of your t-shirts with the Startup Drugs kind of plays into some of those things. And so what was kind of you guys' next step then after Loot? Did you stay on board? Did you kind of, hey, you know, we're going to move to our next type of project?
Well, we had, like, in the interim, towards the tail end of it, we had started doing some more consulting because we did have a lot of subject matter expertise in the space, having developed a native advertising platform and a mobile advertising platform. And I really didn't want to get involved in another type of venture-backed startup, primarily because of what you said, which is I really don't like raising money. And I don't think there are many entrepreneurs out there who do like raising money. You know, there's a few reasons. One is, it distracts from the core focus of the business.
Right.
So your day-to-day, where you should be working on the company and building this innovative product and growing the team, you spend countless hours traveling, pitching, updating the financials, and it's just so distracting. And two, it's just an uncomfortable situation. It's, you have to go to these rooms and you have to sit there and basically ask somebody to give you $5 million. And you're saying, well, here's our projection for the next 5 years, and we'll probably, you know, we're going to be $100 million in year five. And you know in the back of your mind that this is all just, you know, they're educated guesses, but they're still guesses. And that's why I think a lot of VC shops have stopped even asking for like 3-5 year financial, because they're so irrelevant and they don't provide any real tangible data on whether this is a good investment or not.
Sure.
And so, you know, we had dabbled in the consulting, and then towards the tail end, we started Startup Drugs as a fun little side project, and it just took off from day one. And so I didn't have a lot of experience in e-commerce and even less experience on Shopify. And so we made even more mistakes with that launch,
right?
Because we didn't foresee the surge of traffic we're going to get. You know, we assumed we put the store up, we'd launch it, it'll do us the launch a product on, and a few hundred people would come and check it out, and we'd sell a handful of shirts, and that would be the business.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't meant to be a business; it was just like a hobby, a fun little side project. And obviously, we were wrong, because like we had 25,000 people come to the site in the first week.
Jeez.
from product hunt, and I hate to say it, but we probably could have made 20 times as much money as we did that week, just because of a dozen mistakes we made that were total amateur mistakes. That, you know, when clients come to us now with e-commerce stores, I look at them like, oh my, you're missing so many key things. You're just leaving money on the table. So, you know, we went from knowing nothing to being a kind of subject matter expert in a matter of 2 years.
And so what were some of those big glaring mistakes that you see other e-commerce sites making that you guys did that are easy to correct and real simple things?
Yeah, so there's a handful of things. We call it our conversion optimization package that we offer to all of our clients. And so the kind of the key things that entails, one is making sure we're grabbing as much customer data up front as possible without asking for too much. It's a fine balance between asking for too much information and having people bounce off the site, but getting enough that you can then follow up with them. So,
sure.
You know, we use a tool called Just Uno. Suomi is also really popular for grabbing that email for that first time visitor. Usually we'll offer some type of discount, free shipping, 10% off. If you're a knowledge product or info product, you can offer an ebook, a white paper, a free video series, just in exchange for that email. It's all we ask for, not a name, not anything else. That way we put them through an email sequence.
Okay.
So that's like number one. That has to be on every site. If you're not collecting emails, you're just missing out on a ton of value there. We also then do a thing. One of my favorite tools is like a sales ticker. So there's a tool called Credible that we use for Shopify. And essentially what it does is it adds social and validation to your store by displaying almost a live ticker in the bottom left of recent purchases.
Okay.
So every, you know, 20 seconds or so, you'll see a little message that says, hey, Josh Felber in wherever bought X.
Okay.
And so one of the biggest challenges for new store owners is if you're not Amazon or Zappos or Apple, you don't have the level of trust and credibility that they do.
Sure.
So anybody put a site, anybody could accept money over the internet. So what's to say this is just a scam? Or what's to say nobody else is buying it? Nobody wants to be the first person to party. Nobody wants to be the first person to buy something or try something.
Right.
And so that has a huge impact on conversion rates by establishing that trust right off the bat and making people feel more comfortable about making a purchase. So that's number two. Number three is exit intent pop-ups. This is a huge one. This is something that, like, we're watching a video course from Ezra Firestone right now, who's just next level guy. And that's like one of his biggest things is exit intent pop-ups. So you need to have them. And I think he showed some stats for some of his stores. And I think his exit intent pop-up brings in, this is like 12 or 15% of total revenue for their stores.
Wow.
Which is just insane.
Yeah.
And essentially an exit intent pop-up is a little pop-up that appears on the same screen when somebody goes to leave the site. So as their mouse moves to X and close the page, you can hit a pop-up, say, hey, give us one last shot. We'll give you 25% off just now, last chance to do it. And so it's kind of a Hail Mary to get the person to buy instead of the site. So that's a total necessity. And that's another one. I don't want to go on with too many, but another really important one is adding an upsell after the purchase. And so this is where a lot of people lose a lot of money. And this is also what makes it very difficult for most businesses to not be profitable paid media.
Right.
Is their average order value is too low, which makes it incredibly difficult to be profitable. Right. And so we use a tool called One Click Upsell from Zipify for Shopify. It's, to my knowledge, the only way to do true one-click upselling with Shopify, where once somebody makes a purchase, before they get to the thank you page, you can then show them a very specific offer to say, hey, you just bought this product, buy this product right now, and we'll give you 20% off, or to add an extra product. And so you can add different logic to it. You can add different bundles. And the goal of this is really just to add and to increase the average order value. And it's more natural and easy with other platforms like ClickFunnels and stuff, which is built for that. But Shopify, it's been very difficult. So that tool from Zipify really makes it easy and ensures that you can really maximize that value of that customer you're acquiring.
No, that, and that's awesome. I mean, I think those are some definite key points. And like you said, a lot of e-commerce sites don't have them. I mean, plenty of I've bet on myself, and you know, you're buying something, and they're just things you naturally notice anymore these days. Is, hey, I didn't see this happen or this happen or this happen and everything.
Yeah.
So definitely some awesome strategies. So tell me a little bit about, because I know Startup Drugs, you guys scaled that up pretty fast. I mean, you had a lot of people there that first week, and it scaled up pretty fast. And what did that lead to? Because I know you guys have created a partnership with Kevin Harrington now with Quantum Media, right? And then just kind of bring us up to speed where you are today.
Sure. So we did over $100,000, actually $200,000 in our first 12 months in business with Startup Drugs, which is really, really exciting. And, you know, getting to the high five figures on a monthly basis in sales. And we had some of the coolest entrepreneurs, people that I've looked up to, buying our stuff. And that's what's been, I think, the most exciting part about it is getting to, you know, our customers are different than a typical store. A typical store, you're just selling to the general public.
Right.
Our customers are thought leaders, serial entrepreneurs, VCs, social media influencers, people that you would recognize that have huge circles of influence.
Sure.
And so, you know, even like that's how we met. So, you know, getting when you first bought our stuff and then kind of getting to know you and seeing, you know, your huge following and stuff and then building this relationship, having people like Russell Brunson buy our stuff,
right.
You know, the Miami Dolphins bought our stuff. So that's been so cool in this first, you know, year and a half to see that happen. More so than the dollar value.
Right.
And ironically enough, the whole Quantum Media Kevin Harrington relationship started with a Facebook ad. we were running a Facebook ad for Startup Drugs, and my two partners, Ian Smith and Jeremy Adams, who were one half of the agency, they saw the ad, and Ian had commented on it, tagging Jeremy in it and saying, hey, these are cool, we should check them out. And I replied, found out they were just like me. We ended up having lunch together and meeting up. And one thing led to another, and we just started our own little agency. And that eventually, you know, kind of morphed into we were doing work for Kevin, helping him build the digital brand. He was so happy with the results. And he gets pitched so many deals on a daily basis that need marketing services that it just seemed like a natural progression. So let's merge. Let's pool our assets. You're bringing in all this business. We have the ability to grow those businesses and help everyone make a lot more money. And so kind of flash forward to today, we now have an agency that's been just growing exponentially. We're working with some very, very big Fortune 100 companies. And then we're also working with some incredible B2C product companies that are either just getting started or just starting to see a lot of traction. And we're helping them really kind of supercharge that growth.
I know with especially with some of the clients that you're working with, I mean, you guys are crushing it. I mean, you guys have been able to figure out certain, you know, models, people, what they're buying, and just some of the really cool Facebook and strategies and online marketing strategies that you guys have implemented. I know you guys have helped us out with our Primal Life Organics skincare company, and I mean, just the results are. I mean, what, 500x or something on some of the different
campaigns. I wish 500x. I think I checked yesterday when we spoke. I think it was at about like 1,800 in spend and about like 45 grand in sales or something like that. So on the dynamic retargeting, I think we're like a 35 to 40x, and then we have that cross selling campaign that we're running. It's like a 10x. So those are doing good. That's exciting stuff.
So I mean, what I think would be cool is maybe to share some of these, you know, maybe your top three strategies that you utilize when you're putting together a campaign that makes super simple that any of the entrepreneurs watching this, you know, they can go out and click on Facebook and go to the ads and get something set up would be really cool.
Sure. So I think one of the most critical things to understand is the flow of your campaign and the fact that it's not just a matter of run ad A to product page B and expect a sale. And I think that's a misconception that a lot of people that we speak with and that reach out to me, that's what they're doing. That's the extent of their advertising on Facebook, is just trying to drive cold traffic to a product page and expecting them to buy.
Sure.
And that can work to an extent for impulse buy products, commodity type products, and products that are lower priced. It doesn't work as the price goes up and as the education gap increases. So if you're selling something that's new to the market, that has some type of new evolutionary technology that's very expensive, that model just fails and doesn't work. And so you really need to treat it just like you would any other marketing funnel, where you're taking a cold lead and you're nurturing that lead before you try to sell them. And so you're filtering them through different layers, where that first layer is really about sharing ad, that the content is purely based around the problem that the product solves.
Right.
And so that's the first, just like we do with Primal Life, right? So we have an article that talks about the dangers of kind of the big consumer brands' mineral makeup and all the things that are bad inside them. So it's not a pitch of your product. It's a pitch of the problem. And then we're getting people to click on that ad, read that ad, and retargeting those people to the next step. And so we're weeding out all the people in that cold traffic audience that just aren't interested in the problem. They don't have that problem. They can't relate to it. So why would we spend money pitching the solution if they don't have the problem?
Right.
And so that's a big thing to understand. It's just that flow of bring up the problem, make sure you filter out people at that point first, because it's a lot cheaper to do that using video view ads or link click ads than it is to try to get them to do website conversions, which are more expensive because you're trying to get a purchase out of them. And sure. So that's a big thing Ezra Firestone is teaching right now in his video course. And he's all of his brands, he has a video ad that takes a piece of content, they turn it into a video, and they run that video to some really broad audiences. Obviously, they're targeted and filtered.
Right.
But they're still big multi-million audiences. If you watch 75% of that video, you're then going to get retargeted to a pre-sale page, and then you're going to get retargeted to a sales page. And so that's a key component to understand, is that initial process of vetting cold traffic, warming them up, and then getting them to that product page. And so that'd be like the first kind of thing I'd talk about. The second is that once you get them there, you need to have the retargeting audiences set, the custom audiences for the retargeting set up to push that buyer to the finish line. And so somebody could have viewed the product and not added to the cart, and somebody could add to the cart and not bought. And there's reasons at each step why they might not have done that.
Okay.
So somebody that might have landed on that product page without buying, they're clearly interested in the product. They have the problem that you're offering the solution for, but maybe they need some more validation. Maybe you need to share with them some, if you're a medical product, a doctor testimonial video, or user-generated content, customer reviews, video testimonials, things that help convince that prospect
right.
that your product is the real deal, and that's other people talking about it and using it. If you're on the cart page and somebody gets there without leaving, 9 times out of 10, it's the price. That's the reason why they didn't pull the trigger. So offering tiered discounts for different retargeting levels. So the first 2 days doing a free shipping discount, and then days 2 to 7 doing a 10% off, and then 7 to 10 doing a 25% last ditch
right.
discount to get them to buy is critical, because at that point you don't want to lose that lead. I mean, you've done all the work to get them to that point. You need to make sure you're following up with them and pushing them to that finish line.
Sure.
And so that would be number two. And then I guess the third and final thing, it's not the final, there's 150 things we talk about, but just for the sake of the short amount of time we have, is most people, I would say 95% of people I talk to don't do anything past that purchase. And so The entire marketing, not just on Facebook, but everything, is built around acquiring a customer, getting them to buy, and that's it. So acquire a new customer, get them to buy. Acquire a new customer, get them to buy. And the crazy thing about that is it's so much easier, 5 times easier to sell an existing customer as it is a new customer. So you have people that have bought from you. You've already done the hard work in selling them.
Right.
And now you can maximize that lifetime value. You can increase that average order value, especially if you have multiple products. Or if you have products that, like your products, like tooth, they need to get reordered. So if you have a product that is going to run out in a few months and they need to reorder it, you should have a campaign in place to remind that person. Right. So after, if your product runs out every 30 days, you should have an ad that runs 3 weeks after purchase that gives people a special deal if they reorder now. So things like that, where you're doing cross-selling, upselling, and you're doing reminders about reoccurring type of orders, is so critical to really maximizing the profitability of your Facebook campaigns. And it's something, it's probably the lowest hanging fruit for most businesses.
Sure.
And that's what's so scary, that's what's so shocking about it, is how few people do anything with that, especially since it's so easy.
And so the cool thing too is, I mean, all this is available to be able to be done in Facebook. It's just going in and setting up ads and picking the right ad type sets and everything, right?
It's 100% free, with the exception of obviously the media costs, but there's no extra tools or software or anything you need to do what we just talked about.
Sure.
Obviously there's tools and software out there that could supercharge some of those things. Or if you're more advanced and you have a big product catalog, that can make it more powerful. But at a fundamental level, to accomplish all of that, you know, it's taking the time and it's going in there and really mapping out that user journey from cold traffic all the way through repeat purchase, and mapping out the touch points and what you're going to say at each level and how you're going to communicate with them, and then turning that into the Facebook campaign itself.
No, that's awesome. And I know, utilizing that same process, I mean, you guys have created significant revenue and results and everything for a lot of the clients and everything you guys are working with now, as well as Startup Drugs testing with that and, you know, really helping, figure out that whole process and everything along the way. Who do you reach out to, you know, as a mentor for you? You know, like, who do you look to connect to keep furthering your education, keep moving yourself forward?
There are people that I look to as kind of thought leaders in either just Facebook marketing or digital marketing. I don't have the pleasure of knowing them and getting to talk to them frequently, but, you know, like Russell Brunson, who I'd love to talk, we've talked in email a few times, but as a Startup Drugs customer, Dave Woodward, there's, you know, we've talked, sure, we speak frequently, but, you know, Russell is so incredibly smart and ahead of the curve when it comes to funnels and sales copy and stuff. So they have their Funnel U product that we own and that we follow religiously. Frank Kern, we have a lot of his courses. He's great. Ryan Dice and the Digital Marketer guy, I mean, the team there is incredible, and they create top-notch content and everything from organic social to content marketing to PPC to Facebook and everything in between.
Right.
And then I'd say from, like, specifically Facebook, Ezra Firestone is probably the most successful and best Facebook ever, I mean, that I know of, in terms of results and just overwhelming amount of knowledge. And so he has a Facebook video mastery course that we just purchased recently. And it's an incredible course, and it's something that if I had the time and the team to build something, that's the exact course that I would build, because it's just it's so comprehensive across the board. But then, again, you know, the other thing with Startup Drugs is getting to meet people like you, and, you know, we chat a weekly or biweekly basis.
Sure.
And so getting to pick the brain of, you know, other people that have that are ahead of me in their careers and have, you know, done a lot of things that I want to accomplish, and so it's so critical, I think, for any entrepreneur, is surround yourself with people that are smarter than you or more successful than you. You never want to be the most successful or smartest person in your circle.
Right.
I mean, it's hard maybe to admit that, like, from, if you have an ego or something like that. But if you're the smart, successful person in your circle, nobody's going to be pushing you forward. Everyone's going to be pushing you back because they're all behind you. So that's kind of the rule of thumb, I think, for myself and everyone that, you know, I work with that's in my network, is they're trying to find the person that's where they want to be, and getting to meet them and talk to them. And then obviously Kevin. So, you know, getting to work with Kevin Harrington and, you know, spend time with him. And he's just such a gracious and great guy, and just obviously brilliant and incredibly successful. So having him as part of the, the agency and getting to do calls with him on a weekly basis and everything is always exciting.
And then just, we got a couple minutes left. Where can people find out about you, Quantum Media? You know, where do you want to have them find out more information?
Sure. So they can go to quantummedia.co. That's the agency site there. We're in the process of launching a thing called Quantum Entrepreneur Academy, QEA. That's going to be a really great, not even just one course, it's going to be a comprehensive group course, digital product, from people like Kevin and other really high-end thought leaders. It's going to be video content, ebooks, guides,
cool,
mastermind group, everything in one. And obviously a component of that is going to be the Facebook advertising course and courses for me and videos for me. So that's something that we'll be announcing relatively soon, probably in like Q1 2017. And so, you know, if you go to quantummedia.co and sign up for our email list, we'll be sending out updates there. And then anybody can follow, you know, Startup Drugs, startupdrugs.com. And I post a lot of our stuff on our Instagram account. So at Startup Drugs, I share a lot of videos and pieces of knowledge there, or on the Facebook page at facebook.com/MaxwellFinn. So that's the plug for the day.
Awesome. And then what's one device that you can't live without?
I think the obvious answer is obviously my phones. I don't know what I would do without it. And I don't think anybody knows what they would do without it. So it's kind of a double-edged sword of being constantly connected to everything.
Cool. How about what's an app on there that you just love that you just gotta, it helps you run everything?
So I would say, you know, Slack is like just the probably are my favorite app because it's connects our entire team, our managing part of a group with Slack, then our whole company with Slack. And so just being able to instantly communicate with everybody. And then, you know, I think Instagram and Facebook are the two kind of social apps that use a lot of BuzzFeed News is, and I never thought the day would come where I would say like BuzzFeed and News is the same thing, but they put hundreds of millions of dollars into their kind of investigative journalism. And so they pump out some really, really great news stories, investigation pieces on, you know, politics and technology and business and stuff. So those are the group of apps. And then Stripe. So again, the money.
Yeah.
So Stripe is great.
Cool. No, I really appreciate you coming on Making Bank today. It's been an honor to have you and just really start to dive in a little bit about what you guys are doing from a technology standpoint, marketing, online marketing and everything. Definitely have you back on next year again and really dive into more ins and outs of what, you know, what, how can people implement what, you know, what in more in depth of what you guys are doing. So again, thanks for coming on Making Bank today, sharing your information. It was an honor to have you here.
Thanks, Josh. You have a great day.
Cool. You too, man. I am Josh Felbert. You're watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.